From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Today, congressional Republicans introduced legislation that would reform Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two mortgage giants taken over by the government in 2008. All this week, our Planet Money team is partnering with journalists Bethany McLean and Joe Nocera, authors of the book All the Devils Are Here. It's for a special series on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Yesterday, Alex Bloomberg explained that the companies were created by the government with a public mission, but they were private companies whose owners and managers made enormous sums of money. And because of their hybrid nature, there was a belief that if they ever got into trouble, the government would bail them out. This implicit guarantee, as it was called, gave Fannie and Freddie huge business advantages, but ultimately contributed to their downfall. Again, here's Alex Bloomberg.
By the early 2000s, almost 50% of all the mortgages in America were made through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The companies had achieved this dominance because of this implicit government guarantee. Because the rest of the world believed the government stood behind them, Fannie and Freddie paid less to borrow money than almost any other financial institution in the country, which gave them a big advantage. But even though the government guarantee had turned Fannie and Freddie into two of the largest and most powerful companies in U.S. history, everywhere you turned, people denied its existence. At the top of every security that Fannie and Freddie issued, right there in big black letters, it said, "This security is not backed by the U.S. government." High-powered government officials denied it, from George Bush's former Treasury Secretary, John Snow, to the powerful Democratic Congressman, Barney Frank. Here he is in September 2003.
There is no guarantee. There's no explicit guarantee. There's no implicit guarantee. There's no wink and nod guarantee. Invest in you on your own. Nobody who invests in them should come looking at me for a nickel, and nor anybody else in the federal government.
Adding to the course of denial, says journalist Joe Nocera, were Fannie and Freddie themselves.
They would adamantly lash back at anybody who argued that there was, in fact, a government subsidy.
That's what they said in public, anyway. But to the people who mattered, the ones who were buying Fannie and Freddie securities, the companies said something else entirely. Scott Simon was one of those buyers. He heads the mortgage department at PIMCO, the world's largest bond manager, and one of the biggest buyers of Fannie and Freddie securities.
Fannie and Freddie, in meetings with investors, whether it was us or anybody else, essentially just would sort of laugh at and say, well, you know the government will stand behind us.
They would literally say that to you as investors?
I think they said that to most investors. You know, they would sort of wink and nod and just sort of say something along the lines of, well, you know the government can't let us go.
Truer words were never secretly spoken. But when the bailout finally did happen, it happened in a way almost no one could have foreseen. For decades, Fannie and Freddie had used their implicit government guarantee to get huge and powerful, but in a pretty boring way. They dealt mostly with 30-year fixed-rate loans. Borrowers had to document their employment and their income, and most of them made a down payment of 10 to 20%. But then, in the mid-2000s, subprime lenders came on the scene, making loans to people with no income and no job. Barry Zegas was an executive at Fannie Mae during this time, and he says, imagine a customer going through the lengthy process of qualifying for a Fannie Mae loan, scraping together a down payment, showing up at the bank office with all the requisite documents in tow.
And they walk out, and in the parking lot is a broker saying, would you like a home loan? Because let's sit down right here in my car. I'll get we'll do the paperwork right now, which is literally what was happening. And as a consequence, the Fannie Mae share of the market in mortgage-backed securities dropped from, I think it was a combined 70% at the beginning of the century, down to like 30-some-odd percent.
We now know that subprime broker in the parking lot was a symptom, a sign that we were in the midst of the largest housing bubble in national history. But at the time, folks at Fannie and Freddie had no idea what was going on. All of a sudden, these subprime companies that had been around for just a couple of years that had no government guarantee are stealing Fannie and Freddie's customers. And this is the point where their hybrid nature came back to haunt them. Because remember, they had private shareholders. And, says Barry Zegas, those private shareholders were not happy with Fannie and Freddie's market decline. And they let the leadership know.
And it put a tremendous amount of pressure on management.
Do you think that pressure led them to make the wrong decision?
Well, in retrospect, it's obvious it was the wrong decision.
That decision specifically, after much hand-wringing and soul-searching, Fannie and Freddie decided they would not stand by but follow the subprime industry into the abyss. Fannie and Freddie started accepting lower credit scores, stopped requiring proof of income in all cases, and invested in securities made up of subprime loans. Still, they didn't follow them all the way down. Their loans never got as risky as a lot of subprime loans did. And so they thought they were being safe, journalist Bethany McLean.
total corporate self-delusion. By the time the market starts to crack in the summer of 2007, you'd think Fannie and Freddie would have looked in the mirror and said, oh my goodness, the U.S. mortgage market is falling apart. We're the biggest players in this market. We're in trouble. But they didn't. Instead, they thought, well, we've only done the safe business and we're going to be just fine. And this is our opportunity to shine.
In fact, the end came to Fannie and Freddie so swiftly, it caught even their own employees by surprise. Jacob Kossoff was a junior-level analyst at Freddie Mac, and he says that throughout the summer of 2008, despite all the turmoil in the housing industry, he wasn't that worried. In fact, in late summer of that year, he was feeling good enough to go on a multi-week honeymoon to Peru.
I was hiking the Inca Trail with my wife, and another couple, a Dutch couple, had walked by us, and I was wearing my Freddie Mac We Make Home Possible t-shirt as I was hiking, and another couple walked by, and they said, oh, Freddie Mac, I heard you guys went out of business. Random people I don't know are telling me that my firm, which I had just left 2 weeks ago to go on vacation, no longer existed.
Breaking news, the markets are reacting to the big news on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac as the government steps in. Let's get you through the numbers.
In the fall of 2008, these companies that had grown enormous by trading on the belief that the government would bail them out finally got what they'd promised. Fannie and Freddie were on the hook for trillions of dollars all over the world to foreign governments, huge pension funds, a good chunk of the world's banking system.
Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson said today the stakes were too big not to act.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are so large and so interwoven in our financial system that a failure of either of them would cause great turmoil here at home and around the globe.
And so, just as decades of critics had predicted, just as Fannie and Freddie themselves had secretly promised, the U.S. government came in and bailed them out.
It is the largest ever takeover of a financial institution by the federal government in American history.
Coming up tomorrow, we own them. Now what? The future of Fannie and Freddie, now that they're run entirely by the U.S. government, and what that means for the American housing market. For NPR News, I'm Alex Blumberg.
And to hear yesterday's story, visit our Planet Money website, npr.org/money.